Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Three Muses and a Universe, and today we are going to talk about change, just like that airplane flying overhead. Do you force it? Do you prevent it? Do you just sit back and wait for it to happen? What is your relationship with change? So, where would we like to jump in? Because I tell you, change really is our greatest friend and our worst enemy all at the same time. If we have a lot of change, people get scared and want things to stop changing and get grounded and get their footing back. But then if things are grounded and seemingly unchangeable, people go crazy because they feel like their life is stagnant and stuck. And so what do we do? Do we go there and willfully make a change? Do we sit back and just wait for the universe to do it?
I'll say that I exist at two ends of the spectrum between avoiding and running away from change as fast as I can and hiding in a dark room so it cannot find me and diving in just head first and letting it wash over me. I don't usually try to force change. That's not my thing. But I will, it just depends on the thing. Whether, you know, and then sometimes, of course, you can't avoid having change come over you. And so then you just let go. I was hospitalized a little over a month ago, but I was in the hospital for 3 days. And from the second that I got there, I realized there was nothing I could do. My dogs were sitting at home. I left my house and said I'd be back in an hour, and I didn't come back for 4 days. And so there was the whole issue with my dogs, being left alone. They had a caretaker, but, getting the care, all of that. But the whole thing was, you couldn't resist change coming over you. I mean, they completely claim you, in a hospital. You just have to let it all wash over you.
Well, that's really interesting, because just as you were talking, I was having a revelation of sorts that I seem to have a relationship with change within space. So, in other words, the times that I've allowed myself to have space, change is relatively easy. It can flow. But the times when change has been imposed on me and I'm busy and I have so many things going on and, am feeling a little bit ungrounded or scattered, I definitely resist change because it's just, sort of too much. So I wonder if you having those 4 days in the hospital just opened up a space that gave you permission, that gave you
Well,
but you could have still resisted change, though.
Oh, yeah, I could have. But
you had that time to open up and allow it in.
Well, for me, and just because the people who are listening don't understand, for me it was actually a good thing because I was finally getting an answer to something that had been plaguing me for a couple of years. So I was very happy to be in the hospital and to be under their care and to have people actually looking for the cause of my problem,
Yeah. Well, I think that is an important thing, finding your center within change. You know, they say the master walks the middle of the road. I don't think that means we walk around in mediocrity. I think it means that we find the middle of our center, no matter what wild extreme that we're being whipped around. And something else that occurred to me as you were talking about that experience of being in the hospital, and really that is one of those times in life where there isn't a lot of control. Once you're there, you're admitted, you're at the mercy, more or less.
So you may as well give in.
So you may as well give in, and change is very much like a roller coaster. If you put the brakes on while you're going downhill, you're really not going to get up the other hill. So you have to accelerate through the change or whatever. But I think that there were some key things that you guys were saying, and one is
is this something I chose or is this something I didn't choose? And that's very good. And it also got me thinking, we want change all the time, but we want to control it. We want it to stay within the same framework of the familiar, which really isn't change.
So yeah, we want it to be easy.
Yeah, so sometimes we're on that track, and we think we just want forks and that one road to open up to us, but what we really need or want on some other level is something completely different. And so unless we're open to that change that is bigger than what we know, some cosmic 2x4, like being in the hospital, or a marriage breakup or something like that, is going to come and, like a baseball, knock you over into this whole other track. So maybe seeing change as through the eyes of trust is a good idea.
And I was cognizant of that at that time, the night before the episode happened that landed me in the hospital. I wrote in my blog, something is going to have to come along to incite this change in me, because other health things, like I have diabetes, whatever, didn't make me make that change. So something bigger is going to have to come along. And I knew that something, I know that thing about the, you know, first it's a pebble, then it's a stone, then it's a rock and a brick and a boulder that gets thrown at you in order to make that happen.
Yeah.
And I was just hoping that it wasn't something big, and that if I don't make the changes that were inspired from that hospital visit, next time it will be big, because landing in a hospital for a few days is pretty big. So how does it get bigger than that to shock you into making your change? And so I do usually kind of prefer to have it imposed on me, just so long as it's not a, because I'm so good at avoiding it otherwise, just so long as it's not something that is devastating, you know?
Well, why do we resist change in the first place?
It's hard. It takes effort.
It's hard, yeah. You have to learn new things. You have to learn a new system of rules. Maybe.
Yeah, you have to put things that might be sort of quote-unquote working for you to the side for things that will work better for you. You know what I mean? It's not always old as crap and new as good. Sometimes it's old as serviceable, but new is even better for you. You know what I mean? So you're not always leaving. You're not always running away from something horrible.
Well, and that's another thing that we're taught, that we're always messing up, this original sin thing. We're blemished from the get-go. What that says is that you're always out of a state of balance and peace, and you have to get somewhere else. So everybody's looking for fulfillment and happiness outside of themselves, because we can't find it within us, because we're apparently flawed by the panel of cardinals in the 1200s that decided that we have original sin. So people feel that they have to be changing. So I think that's our unnatural relationship to it, is that we have to change, or that we're somehow going to be punished, that things are going to change for the worse. So we're more comfortable being miserable now than the threat of and the hope of something good than being happy and the threat of losing it.
So you're speaking to like an ancient orientation, even within. So even if we're looking within to change, and, you know, in addition to looking outside for change, that inner change is even harder than, you know, than the outer change.
Yeah.
But it harkens to that whole, that ancient orientation of staying with the flock, doing as the flock does, you know, stay in your place. Stay, do as we do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go outside the box. But our level of consciousness within our species now is so far outside of that, so it's this struggle, this push and pull between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, what is change about in the first place? Why do we resist it? But what is it, what's the evolutionary purpose of change?
Yeah, see, and I do think that we are here to sort of move forward. I'd hate to die and then find out that that we were really just here to
have fun.
Evolution was just a trick to trick us into thinking we're not okay where we are, and that
it could be
thing.
Holy crap!
Yeah.
That's it.
And maybe it's where you get to the end of the road and you realize I didn't have this.
I'm going back to drinking, smoking, and whoring.
Smoking in the whore, or drinking in the whore, where?
So it is very interesting because, you know, we don't know why we're here and why do we keep pushing ourselves forward. And, you know, and I think that you made a good point, too, that if you don't incite change, maybe the change that comes upon you will be a change you don't like, or it'll be a change that's a lot harder for you to get from point A to point B. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe you'll be in a car accident and you'll become paralyzed or something like that, and that's a very difficult thing to deal with on top of whatever else. You know what I'm saying?
But not all change is good change. You know, we do have discernment to, help us navigate what is best and what isn't. And ultimately, according to our most true path, our genuine authenticity, you know, but does everybody have the ability to discern what is their most authentic path? And if you're really stuck in old conditioning, everybody has the ability, not everybody, but most people have the ability to discern. But to discern what?
Yeah.
Well,
you
know, that's the thing. What are you
discerning? I mean, if you're really stuck in an extremist culture, would you be discerning the same kinds of things as you would if you were in a much more of an open-minded
environment? That's a good point.
I might argue, though, because you said that not all change is good change, and I, like, there are actually two examples from my neighborhood of gentlemen who, in their late 20s or 30s, got involved with a woman. One of them then started drinking too much because she was an alcoholic, and he ended up losing his home because he became an alcoholic.
But there were two men involved with one woman.
Two separate incidents in my neighborhood. And the other guy got involved with a woman who was into methamphetamine, and his house became a meth house. I live in a lovely neighborhood. His home became a meth house, and he lost everything. And this other man lost everything. So those are what I guess we would call examples of bad change, but I'm guessing they probably led to good change because both of those men were lacking, we hope, eventually. Because both of those men were lacking something that in their late 20s, I mean, it just really surprised me that in somebody's late 20s or 30s that they would pick up a bad habit like that, you know what I mean, when everybody else is done with that stuff, you know?
Yeah, that is interesting. But you know what, I think that this idea of bad change and good change, it all gets down to being at one with yourself, because I think we fracture and get these parts of us that we call the self-sabotager that creates this change that comes in radical ways because the other side is so rigid. What are we listening to? Are we running from a self that we hate and we think is awful and evil? And so is all of the change being driven with that concept? Or is our change saying, I am this great being and I'm evolving into greater and greater things? And if we believe that, I think the agent that's driving the change is going to take us in a very different way to very different experiences. So I think that if we look at how change is occurring in our life, are we getting the wake-up calls, the cosmic 2x4s, or is change coming in these gentle, beautifully spiritual ways of angels taking you to this new epiphany, that it'll show you the areas that we're resisting or that we have a belief that doesn't honor the past?
And so a lot of that has to do with allowing, but that's just one more kind of nebulous aspect of this whole topic of change. Because, you know, there's a saying that says, let go and let God. So does let God mean be passive? Does it mean trust, as you brought up before? Does it mean trust whatever the universe is bringing you? But if you've been raised in a very imbalanced, ungrounded, you know, stuck conditioning, what does letting God mean?
I had that conflict for many years of beliefs create your reality, you create your own reality, and let go and let God. I thought they seem in opposition. So how I made those into one thing is, it's my job to say what, and the universe's job to say how.
Yeah.
That's how it let me see that it's our what. And so there's one way of believing about change is that it is born in the heart and manifests through the will, that kind of thing. And so if you have something in the heart that later becomes manifest with will, you have to be at one with that change, that decision. So I think that's where we participate. You have to let it be born in your heart, because if it's not really in your heart.
May I introduce my dropping soap in the shower analogy?
Please, we've been very curious.
So one of the things that I had learned many years ago about holding on to something is to consider it like a bar of wet soap in your hand, right? If you squeeze too tight, it pops out of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't squeeze hard enough, it slips out of your hand. But there is an amount of pressure that you can put on it that keeps that soap in your hand when you're in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is kind of that place between making something happen and allowing something to happen. Is that we all have to find our own grip on that thing, right? Because a lot of the times forcing something to happen is going to take you. I mean, I've just always believed that God just has a much greater vision of who you are and what you can be than you have for yourself. And so allowing God to drive the bus, to do the how, is a wise choice, because it's probably going to lead you to a different destination than driving the bus yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so to find that grip that brings you the best result, and that only really comes from practice. And if all you've practiced so far is trying to control every little step of the way, then just try letting go and see how much better that works for you, if it does. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to have both. You've got to have the grip on, but you can't make it so tight that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the will is more like that passion, because if you don't really want something for you, it's hard to manifest too. Like if I thought getting a new Cadillac or whatever the, I know Cadillacs are kind of old news, but whatever the latest car is, because everyone has it.
A Tesla,
yeah. But if that's not what I really want, you know, it has to be born in the heart. It has to be something but yet, I don't know. I don't know. So why do you guys think people feel inspired to do New Year's resolutions?
I think that there is a hope that there is somehow power in that. And, I do something different every year. I've done resolutions in the past, and now I'm just down to I pick a word, which I had hoped that I would have picked last night for my blog on www.tierneysadler.com. You'll see next week the word that I picked, because I wasn't able to pick it this week. I wasn't able to find the right word, but I pick a word, and I pick some sort of an inspiration. So, like last year, my word was healing, and I ended up getting an answer to a problem that I'd had for many years, physically. And then my phrase was hold yourself to a higher standard, And that came up multiple times in the air. And I always tell people to really just choose one thing, one mantra. Like my sister chose joy, and at first blush that sounded like such a lame thing to me. Oh, yes, or everybody wants joy. But basically what she was saying was that in certain moments that word would come into her head and she would make a different choice that would lead to joy instead of whatever road she was going down. So it became a mantra and a focus that maybe wasn't there when, you know, I don't know, when she was having an argument with the parking attendant, but maybe came later when she was deciding whether to watch TV or read her book, and she read her book instead. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you just choose that one word, then it becomes just a very simple focus. Whereas in years past, I've chosen like 20 words, and then you can never even remember one of the 20 words.
It sounds like you actually
kept your resolution in mind all year long.
The year before it was motivation.
What is the technique?
It really is just a couple of years ago, this past year it was healing. I made a little bag and put the word healing in there with some charms and a healing stone, and I kept it in my purse, and so every time I saw it in my purse, I would shake it, and I would think healing. That was it. You know what I mean? It's just a mnemonic, you know? But that I was living 2015 with the intention of healing, and now on the threshold of 2016, I can see so many ways in which healing played out that had nothing to do with what was in my mind at the end of 2014 when I came up.
But it had everything to do with healing.
I was thinking, I just want to find out what the freak is wrong with me. And I found that out in November. It was asthma. I've just been living with asthma for years, untreated. So I finally found that that's what I had intention when I wrote it. But I also managed to heal some wounds with family. I managed to heal some issues with myself where I don't put myself first, I don't let myself matter as much as everything else matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be my phrase this year is I matter. So far, that's what I'm thinking.
I think that's a wonderful thing. I have always written titles of the last year and then the title for the coming year, which is a similar thing, but I really like that phrase idea better because the more general, the more things will fit in.
Yeah, I pick a word and then I pick a phrase that might inspire me. But I'm just reaching in my purse now.
So,
you guys got back.
Oh, you still have
it. I keep them in.
So what is the resolution that you have tried over and over and over again at the same in your life that you've never gotten anywhere with?
Lose weight. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that I cannot force upon myself. That is the one that I'm hoping that I'm hoping I don't end up with a heart attack in the hospital in order to fix.
Well, I got to say, weight is probably one of the big ones. Mm-hmm. I did, back in 2009 and 2010, I did a series called Healing from the Inside Out, where we worked on weight issues. I used hypnosis and EFT and a bunch of other things. And also discussed the importance of probiotics. And then we did field trips, like to go find our natural food, muscle tape. I wish I had done something more to package that because a lot of people now have done that. But it was so powerful. And the biggest thing I would say is weight loss, in quotes, was loss hurts. Why would we want to have weight loss? Because the word loss is scary to us subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's shame. We always do it because of shame, and our higher self really doesn't like to make us do things out of shame. because shame doesn't really exist. So it has to be a different motivator, I think.
Shame is definitely a huge thing with me. And I do believe, just like what you were saying, that that the shame has kept me from being able to make some changes. You know what I mean? Because you just, you know, once you start thinking about how ashamed you are, and you know, with this asthma thing, I was untreated for a number of years. My doctor told me it was because of fat, that I wasn't working hard enough to lose weight, and he called me a hypochondriac. And I'm a person who has asthma, had it pretty bad, but never coughed, never wheezed. So I did not fit. Nobody caught it until I ended up in the hospital and had to have a chest scan, and then they caught it. But he fed into that shame.
Yes.
You know what I'm
yes.
saying? And I allowed him to, and that's why I matter means to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is because there's just a lot of shame with me around weight, and the shame keeps the weight on. I'm certain of it. And so I don't know what to do to you know what I mean? I'm just trying to work through the shame
yeah.
as much as I can.
Yeah.
You know what I
yeah.
mean?
And that's the big part of it, and why emotional freedom techniques of a variety of styles really help and work is because you're getting rid of all those negative connotations that get put on it. And during that class, we did not diet. It was nothing like that. One lady lost 50 pounds, another 40, another 32. We didn't diet at all. It was never about that.
How long? How many weeks did it go on?
I think I should, because I need to take it myself.
How about you?
But
how does it work for you?
I would say, I did it first for 5 weeks, and everyone was getting into it so much. I had so much more material to deliver that we did it another 5 weeks. It started out, I was going to only do 4 weeks of it then. And it was really powerful, and people healed their relationship. And also the types of foods everyone ate and saw as being their favorite foods completely changed, and it is still true to this day. From 2009, 2010, and it's 2015, almost 2016, it changed. Everybody is in a completely different relationship with food. And it came from my own experience with that, because I was heavy as a child, and putting on weight at this latter part of my life, it brought me a lot of shame, because I was told on so many levels that I just am not acceptable being so heavy. I was standing in the Whole Foods looking at these cookies that was going to take my grandkids a treat, and this man walked up to me and said, "You don't need to be looking in there,"
yeah.
and walked away. And I was so taken aback.
And you're not even that big, Mary.
Like that. And it was
yeah.
like, everything, and I remember some kids were called my sister and her sister-in-law a fat cow, and she at first got so hurt, and she said it just made me think, like, what makes that kid think that I'm supposed to be sexy for him when I'm in my 40s?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think our next one should be about this weight loss resistance.
The shame.
And the shame of our body image as women.
Mm-hmm.
I did a telepathic TV episode on deglamorizing one time, and a girl was getting ready to kill herself when she clicked on the show because she weighed 250 pounds and had severe acne at 14. And she said she didn't even think that it was possible to be okay.
But she did.
Yeah.
She became okay.
She watched the show holding the pills, and she threw them in the trash and didn't kill herself. And it was like her angels led her to that topic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyway, I know we're down to our last few seconds here. So, join us next month for Three Muses. I
yes.
know we were right at a very interesting thing, but
it'll be February. It'll be February when we meet again.
February. And maybe if it's in the ethers of change or whatever at that time, we can continue on why we don't change, like the shame as a big
yeah.
Okay. Well, it was a great time. We're down to our last 29 seconds. named Tierney on TierneySettler.com,
yes.
Cash.com, and MaryFeeling.com, which is really TelepathicTV.com. I think it funnels there, or it's an old Mary Feeling website, but TelepathicTV.com.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we are down to our last 10 seconds.
See you in February.
See you in February.